Hot round! Red 7, red 7, red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what red 7 means.
I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
You don't think that lame-ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch!
Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
That's gonna make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying.
Welcome into E11 Personnel, Nick Roush with Adam Luckett. Very excited to be talking to you while we wait. We're playing the waiting game. When we originally scheduled this Wednesday night podcast recording, like we thought Wandale Robinson was going to be a Wildcat by now, but the anxiety we were all too well familiar with from 2018, it's back. It's back in a big way across the Big Blue Nation.
Yes, we're playing the waiting game for Mr. Wandale once again.
But you know what, though?
The more things change, the more they stay the same sometimes.
You're right. And just because there's a little waiting, I'm not more discouraged. I'm using double negatives there. But, like, you know, a close into the transfer portal, commit to Kentucky within 24 hours, that was too good to be true. Like, there's got to be some flair for the drama on an edition this big. So, you know what? I'm not discouraged. Still walking on sunshine, ready to welcome number one back to the Big Blue Nation with open arms, because if he does in fact pull the trigger and come to Kentucky, it's a game changer, man. I mean, we talked about it then, same applies now. A game-changing slot receiver to go with Josh Ali, who's played in the SEC, who's gone up against SEC defenses. Just having that extra weapon, man, you can't overstate the significance of adding a reliable receiver to that room that just desperately needs it while you're breaking in a new quarterback and a new play caller.
It's very easy to talk yourself into the wide receiver corps with his addition. You got him, Ali, proven piece, Keaton Upshaw, tight end, and some young guys you're pretty excited about. I think it's very easy. And when you consider what you think you're getting with Cohen, where the Rams, they really don't have a bona fide guy outside. It's a lot of tight ends and inside receivers. Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods are both slot guys.
Right.
That they find creative ways to get down the ball. So you kind of combine Robinson with Ali, you know, it's enough to, I think, to really get you excited if you can land him. It is just a proven entity, a top 100 recruit, a guy you really wanted out of high school. And, you know, the staff, they went out of their way to keep a good relationship with Damian Harris.
Mm-hmm.
There was the – wasn't it floated around one off – like one off season, him and Stoops got lunch together or something like that. And then Jedrick Wills, you've heard them talk about them. I talk about him. I'm in a good light, and they even said, like, he texted Stoops after Schlarman passed.
Yeah, this staff is not in the business of burning bridges.
That those are – they do that on for a reason, because there's always a chance.
And you know, Xavier Peters actually came back.
Grass isn't always greener. Xavier's another example, right? But, like, for Robinson, it's just a position struggle to recruit. It's exactly what the offense needs. You feel like you get him, it's going to make the transition a lot easier to this new system. And then you start to look at the weapons on the team to go with what should be a good offensive line, and you just start to get excited, man. So it's a big deal. He's going to make a difference if he comes to Kentucky. You know, I think it makes the most sense to come to Kentucky. Of all the options on the table right now.
Right, right. The Purdue was the one floated out there. And as much as I have Purdue bias, familial bias, it just, as much as you can pitch Rondale's success to Wandale, I mean, they're buddies. They've worked out together. Like, they've known each other for a long time. It just doesn't really add up, because the situation at Purdue isn't that much different than the situation at Nebraska. Just all of it, the kind of middle of the road play, you know, the lack of consistency. I mean, like it just doesn't, it doesn't add up to me. So while I don't know, I don't think I've got my blue blinders up to think that.
Yeah, I don't either. It, the Purdue and Nebraska move is a lateral move. Not to say like Kentucky's a better program at rest or whatnot, but it doesn't make sense. Same division, the same problems at Nebraska are kind of the same problems Purdue has. It just doesn't, you know, to come out and say you're, you know, want to be close to your mom, Purdue's still, what, 3.5 hours away from Frankfurt?
Yeah, maybe a little bit more.
Yeah, I just
– yeah, yeah.
And then you Steve Wiltfong, who's like the head honcho recruiting guy.
Midwest.
Had a post on it.
Yeah.
I had a post on him today. It was pretty much like it comes down to, you know, the Purdue offense telling him really that he's the next Rondale Moore, and you talked about that relationship between those two. And then it's the – for Kentucky, it's the can come home, you know, be for the life after football, can, you know, have a good year. You can sell your Kentucky football player for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be a big daggone deal if he comes to Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And so it just, I mean, it's recruiting, man. You know, you usually in transfers, you don't really, this is not like something you see because usually a lot of it's under the table, under the radar. You just make a decision and that's it. It's not very publicized. That's why in this transfer, it's kind of hard to cover recruiting because you don't know who's off who's after who, because they keep it quiet for the most part. But this one, is turning into like a real recruiting battle again. So I mean, we'll see. Hopefully, it's not
portal, man.
2.0.
Portal is a whole different ballgame. You know, just the nature of it. We've seen some guys go in. We haven't seen many go out yet, which has kind of surprised me, but I would assume that that's maybe next week. I got my dates wrong. Apparently they don't start classes until after Martin Luther King Day. COVID
really start late this year.
Yeah. COVID messed up the schedule. So I would imagine that you would see some transfers going into the portal from UK right around that time. But Ed Wandale would be huge. And I think he's not the only guy they're going to go to the transfer portal to get, because we got some surprising news. Like it, I think most people were anticipating that Jamin Davis would be back for another season. And this just wasn't because you made a depth chart for Friday afternoon that went out of date about 3 hours later. But like, I mean, even people close to the program were, I wouldn't say like, what's the word I'm looking for? They thought there was a chance he might go, but believed that he would come back to try to build that draft stock, like most people have. But, you know, every kid's different. Every kid's family's different. Every kid's family has different needs. When you have a year like he had, I can't blame the kid from Ludowice for deciding to cash in on a huge year and just take the money and run. Can't blame him whatsoever. But there's no denying like it that they just lost their best defensive player going into 2021.
Yeah, I think for Jamin to support the river, he's a redshirt junior. So this isn't a 3-and-done, it's a 4-and-done. So he had 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a guy who enrolled early too. So he's been here a while. And it just, I think it was him cashing out after peak year. I mean, it was going to be hard for him to produce the same type of year he just had.
Especially when those first 3 years, too, were a slog. Like, he really didn't come along until halfway through his third. The month of November in that 2019 season, he really came along, had 6 tackles. And from my understanding, Jamin, as great of an athlete as it was, it just, the light bulb in his head from an X's and O's standpoint, it took a little bit longer for him. He figured it out. I think, like, look, and I was trying to think. I went back through the stats because there's been some great linebackers here. I mean, I know you want to talk about, you know, OLBU or, you know, all this kind of junk, but Kentucky's They've had some great individual performances at inside linebacker over the last decade, dating back to Danny Trevathan having 732 tackles in 12 games. His tackling stats are just insane. I mean, absolutely insane. I think 144 was like a down year
for right.
him. I mean, he was insane. But like between, I mean, he's still in the league. Avery Williamson had some big years. He's still in the league. Jordan Jones had that crazy sophomore year.
Yeah, 16.
But man, Davis's, it holds up with all of them. And they did it in an all SEC schedule in only 11 games. He's one of only like five players in the last decade to go over 100 tackles. And most of those dudes are in the NFL right now. Two of them were playing in wild card games last weekend. Mm-hmm.
He was awesome. He was awesome. And I think for Jamin, like, I think this decision probably came down to how much better am I going to get? I'm entering my redshirt senior year. This year I just put together pretty daggone good. Like, how much better can you just get just playing one more season?
The
argument, he just dealt with a COVID year, right?
The argument you would make is that, like, you know, putting some more tape out there would make some teams, like, if you put that tape out there again, and it didn't have to be exact, but more teams would be confident in picking you. But you know what? He can sell that, damn it, I just played 11 or 10 SEC games and did that. So, you know, I can't blame him.
It's important to remember the position here too. You're not seeing very many inside linebackers going high in the draft. It's not a position they really value from a top draft pick standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at Darian Kennard, Josh Allen, the reason they came back was because they knew their new potential is there to get into that first round, to get into the top 20 picks with a big year.
Mm-hmm.
Because offensive tackle and edge rusher, outside of quarterback and probably receiver right now, they're the most important positions on the field. So unless you're just a freakazoid like a Devin Bush, Devin White from LSU a couple years ago,
mm-hmm.
Roquan Smith, like that's the crop. And those guys aren't even getting picked in the top 10. You know what I'm saying?
I'm wondering where Mosley's going to end up because he didn't have a great year.
I'm seeing second and third round for him.
Yeah. And he's near the top of the draft class when it comes to that position. So,
right. So that's my only point. I think best case scenario for Jamin was to come back, kick major butt, and then maybe get into the end of the first round. So is it worth that, or just take your chance now? It's weird now this year because the combine's probably not happening. So
they're still doing some of those bowl games though. So I bet they do something. Like what exactly it is, they're going to do something. They just can't. They can't.
I don't know how they're going to do the testing.
And how are they going to do like? The meetings are almost as important as the testing. You can't do that.
But for Jamin, I think when they dig into probably him as a person, he seems like great teammate, great kid, versatile, play special teams, play multiple positions, waited his time at UK, never really seemed to have any issues. And then just from a versatility standpoint, he can play micro will. He did some stuff last year as an outside rusher in some packages. So I think he's going to find a role pretty fast in the NFL. The decision probably came down to, all right, this is what you are. This is the ceiling. Maybe it's just time to, you know, cash in on the big year and go ahead and move. I don't think it was a wrong decision because, again, I think the positional value of it, there's just, I mean, not to say that position's not important. It's just, there's a lot more other important positions, and you can get like good players like at that position.
Yeah, from like free
all the rounds.
Will Compton is the player that comes to mind like that. Where you know you get a guy who's not the best, but if they know what the hell they're doing out there, then they can give you a lot for value.
Right. So from that standpoint, man, you know, congrats to him. I think it's a good success story for Kentucky. A mid 3-star recruit from South Georgia came in, developed him, turned him into a draft pick. Redshirt junior, got 100 tackles and was drafted. So not only that, it's a selling point to kids on their roster. Just be patient. your time will come. Like, look at this guy, what he did. Like, example, like J.J. Weaver. Remember last year, it was like it felt like they had to get him in there at the end of last year. Out of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, Jamin Davis is a selling point where you don't have to play right away. Like, this is, there's just a system, how this works. Like, just trust the process. We're going to get you to where you want to go. So just put in the work, and everything's going to work out.
Mm, yes. I'm sorry. I just yawned. The late night tip-offs, and then you got Sunday Night Football wild card and a national championship game. Like, just staying up for the start of the fourth quarter, it was like 11 o'clock at night. But way too late. Those commercials were very long in that national championship game, which we can get to. But first, what does UK do without Jamin? Well, let's hit up that portal. Now, obviously, you like some of the pieces you've already got there. Derek Jackson was decent as a true freshman. I mean, like,
he better than we thought, probably.
Yeah, yeah, much better, especially as like the lowest ranked kid in that class. So he's one that I'm confident will improve.
South Georgia again, man. That's going to be one of my points of emphasis, I think, this offseason, Nick.
South Georgia?
South Georgia has just treated them really well. You look at Jamin Davis. You look at Derek Jackson, who could be a starter. KD McDaniel is a guy I'm high on. I think he can maybe be a surprise of a defense this year. So I just think it's an area that they've done well in. Chauncey Magwood, who's a guy we're mm-hmm. high on.
Yep.
South Georgia. I would keep hammering away at that area. I think it's really been good for the program. I think the type of kids that come from that area end up being really good kind of culture fits with what Kentucky does, which is that blue collar, chip on the shoulder,
right?
Kind of salty, you know, player, where we've seen in South Florida, some of those guys, they haven't fit for whatever reason. I think South Georgia kind of more of a cultural fit for there. And that's an area I really hope the staff kind of hones in on, really tries to make an emphasis, because I think they've gotten some really good players there.
And in addition to Derek Jackson, there's a guy close to home who, like, this is gives him an opportunity to, I don't mm-hmm. know if he'll necessarily play Mike that much, but Jared Casey, here you go, buddy. You got a year under your belt. Go make some plays.
Yeah. He should. I think he should. He's 225, 230. That's big enough. Like, these, I think Mike and Will are interchangeable now, mm-hmm. Especially with some of these spread offenses getting in here. Like, I think he should be, like, he should have the inside track, I would figure, to be that Mike linebacker. You're going to need him next year anyway, unless Derek Jackson's just kind of a stud. You have to have right. him on the field.
Right.
But,
right.
But Casey was a big recruiting win. A Louisville kid. You really need to, like, these Louisville kids, you really need to, like, they really need to develop these guys and get a couple of these guys drafted so they can keep that recruiting momentum going in that city. They got a lot of it right now, but you have to keep rolling. If you can get some of these guys drafted, which Weaver seems to be on the way, but if you can develop Casey, then you really have something. That was a guy they flipped from Oregon. So I think he's a guy that they really need to take a big jump forward. But I think inside linebacker obviously can be a place they could visit the portal and try to find some depth.
Oh, yeah. And that certainly seems to be the case. I don't think that'll be happening this week. But there's a Michigan State guy, a Cardinal Mooney guy, last mm-hmm. name of Fulton, who appears to be on UK's radar. They were actually his first offer way back in 2017. So he's one to keep an eye on, but there could be more.
Fulton is one. I think he might be a Sam. Like, I think he's an outside linebacker when I've kind of watched this, dug in with some of his tape. He's got some length, some physicality, where I think he could play inside, but I think his best position might be that Sam position, which is a position that they need some guys at, to be honest. And he was a top 500 recruit. You know, that's Cardinal Mooney, like you said, had some off the field issues. He got arrested for a fight, it looked like.
Yeah. But which,
come
on,
if you go out on a limb for these Cardinal Mooney kids.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah. I mean, like, if we penalized every Youngstown kid who got in a fight at a frat party, then, I mean, we're left with nobody. I mean, who'd be on the coaching staff? Zero people would be on the coaching staff if that were the case. So, you know, I don't make too much of it, but the, when I talk to some people about what Fulton could do, he's a guy that he's going to be in the right place at the right time. May not have the, the physical attributes, but he's going to be, he's going to make sure everybody's lined up, make sure the defense is operating as it should. So, that's one name to keep an eye on. I don't think they're done yet, but it's, you know, it's a long off season. Not only do you have guys getting in the portal ahead of their second semester, you also have guys who are trying to graduate who are going to hop in the portal as well.
So. Right. After a spring ball, there's like two periods of the portal. Usually got the end of the season where everybody jumps in and you move into spring ball. And then after spring ball, people are going to jump in. And that could be even more crazy this year.
Right. Because
teams all over the country are making roster cuts pretty much where it's like, you got to go. We don't have room for you. We got to bring in some freshmen.
Especially with kids coming back for like the COVID.
You're going to see that a lot. Deal. I think it's going to get crazy again there in April, May, when spring ball's over and all the semesters are in and around the country. And then staffs will be scrambling there from May to June to get some transfers.
It's pretty wild. Look at that, National Signing Day used to be the big deal. And now it's early signing period and then transfer portal window.
Yeah, you have periods now.
Multiple.
You've got the early signing period, you got the first transfer portal window, you got the late signing period, and you got the late transfer portal window. Like, we're going to have to figure out a way how to, I think 24/7, I think I've heard some other guys talk about this, how they're going to classify like these classes now, because you can't just grade the recruiting classes because of all these guys in the portal. Like WKU, I think, had like three signees and they've had like 13 guys transfer. So they're like, they're not even they're hardly recruiting high school. They're just hitting the portal. SMU, Sonny Dykes, he hammers at the portal. So a lot of these guys are not even like really going full out in recruiting. They're just getting guys in the portal. And Kentucky's looking like they're going to have a small class and they may go get five or six transfers from the portal.
It's, we're in a time where things are changing rapidly, and how each team embraces that change will, like, I mean, same thing it was with COVID. Like, teams that dealt with COVID the right way, right away, had a leg up on the competition. Same is going to be said with all the new rule change stuff. And the thing is, too, like, it is, everybody was preparing for the rules to go a certain way. And now it doesn't even look like they're going to change them right away, too. Emmer keeps kicking this can down the road. So, oh, it's just trying to keep up with it. It's going to be crazy. That's what we're doing now, is trying to keep up with it. Waiting on Mondale. Ultimately, I think by the time you'll be hearing this, you will know that Wandale Robinson is back at Kentucky. And I thought this stuff was going to happen Tuesday. Found an old picture of him with Bo Allen. Man, you want to talk about something to get Kentucky fans fired up. Lexington kid throwing to a Frankfort kid to kick some ass in the SEC. Like, come on. Dream come true right there.
Yeah, I mean, you could have a lot of Wandale or Bo Allen throwing to Wandale. You could have on defense J.J. Weaver rushing the passer.
Mm-hmm.
Jared Casey roaming over the middle. And Vito Tisdale. Davante Robinson back at safety. Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, there's
Isaiah
a lot
Cummings
of
catching passes on the outside. Right. Yeah.
There's a lot of Kentucky flavor that really the program could really strike on. And like I said, if those guys are good, like we talk about building a fence around this, that's how you build a fence around the state, is not only you got to get them there first, but then you develop them. If you develop them and then you get guys in the NFL from areas that other kids are growing up in, that right. they went up watching them, and their coaches
Frederick
know.
Douglas. Right.
Yeah, it just – it makes a, you know, a big difference. It's going to allow them to really hone in and kind of own the state in recruiting, which is everybody's goal, no matter what program you're at.
Especially in one where – I know it was a big talking point early on. I think it was a little misguided, but, like, the top 10 players in the state of Kentucky – are all generally pretty darn good. There's years that are better than others, some that are much worse than others. But for the most part, a lot of the – they produced some pretty good football players over the years. There was just a lot of the kids from Louisville were going to Louisville. Kids were going to Notre Dame. Kids were going elsewhere. Locking them up, keeping them at home is huge. And then bringing guys back is huge. And I know we've talked about it previously, but Chris Rodriguez today – that, and I know there was a little bit of uncertainty, but when I reached out to like, okay, just want to make sure he's coming back, right? There was like a, well, duh, you know,
everybody else made an announcement and he didn't.
Yeah.
So that made you like, what? Cause he NFL eligible, but he was only a redshirt sophomore.
Right.
That made you worry. But Rodriguez, I hope people understand how good of a year he had last year. He was, you can make an argument, he was the best running back in the SEC outside of Najee Harris.
Yeah.
Like that, I think that's legitimately on the table. It's just the offensive staff didn't make him a priority. They didn't decide to emphasize him. So that's a proven piece for Cohen to come in. Like he is legit. Like he could come, I think he could run for 1,500 yards next year.
Especially, I mean, when you consider the fact that he was used in such a limited capacity. I mean, the dude just didn't get tackled behind the line of scrimmage until the freaking bowl game. That's just stupid. It's a stupid stat. Like you don't see guys like that very often, and he wasn't used enough, and that's part of the reason why they're bringing in new guys in. And yeah, you've got a new coach with it. Hey, there's so much to be excited about next season, and having a bell cow like Chris Rodriguez there who should have more of a passing game to open him up. I mean, he did that wicket without any passing game whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
We saw what NC State did. They were just daring Kentucky to throw the ball, and they were still running the ball effectively with Rodriguez and Rose. So
yeah, I mean, and a lot of that, I think Kentucky's offensive line was really good, obviously. But Rodriguez was much better than the other backs. Now, A.J. Rose turned it on late. You can make an argument the last three games how good he was. But the whole season, it was Rodriguez and everybody else. Really, as from a skill position standpoint on the offense, he was by far their most effective option. And the fact that he only had reached the 20 carry threshold once all season is, you know, it's malpractice. And I think that there's a lot of reasons Grant and Henshaw got fired, but I think that was one of the main causes for sure.
Yeah, I would say so. Luckett, we've talked a lot about, you know, good old transfer portal stuff. We've been in this portal too long. So what I want to do is introduce a new segment that we're going to try to make a recurring thing here. I know we normally just sit here and talk ball, but we've reached a point now where our conversations together, it's too good to deprive from the public. So this segment, each week, we're going to bring to you the most bizarre things from college football. It could only happen in college football. It's called What a Sport. Because sometimes things happen and you just like, only college football. And to start, I would like to introduce to you, actually, Steve Sarkisian was the one that was introduced to Texas fans the day after the national championship game. What's the first thing Sark has to do? He has to go hold on to a rope that's tied around
Bevo, yeah,
a big ass steer that has horns 8 feet wide. That basically, first thing you do on the new job, like imagine this is your new job. It has nothing to do with livestock, but the first thing you have to do is to go like hold this cow. What a sport. What a sport.
Mm-hmm. Which the Sark hire is growing on me. I think that could end up being a really good hire for Texas. Time will tell. But mine is, there's a guy named Will Friend, South Carolina's offensive, let's see here. Who did he coach last year? Tennessee's offensive line coach.
Yeah.
South Carolina hires him so he can reunite with Bobo. He's kind of Bobo's right-hand man, went with him at Colorado State, was there. He gets to South Carolina, has an introductory press conference. Less than a week later, Will Friend and Mike Bobo are at Auburn.
Out.
After having the introductory press conference. And it's not only that. He retains another assistant, new head coach Shane Beamer does, Tracy Rocker, defensive line coach. Auburn also decides to pluck him. He's out. So you've got – and Auburn has a brand-new head coach in Brian Harsin. And Derek Mason, who's Auburn's new defensive coordinator, was also looked like to be South Carolina's top target at defensive coordinator. So you've got two new staffs, one in Columbia, one in Auburn on the Plains. And there are four guys that the new South Carolina head coach wanted, and Auburn's new head coach came and stole all of them. And of course, Auburn goes to South Carolina goes to Auburn, I believe, next season.
Yeah, they play each other next year. Mm-hmm. Man, what a sport! There's one. Speaking of South Carolina, so when they didn't get Bobo, they went and hired.
Right away, too. They did not waste any time.
Like, one of them happened the next morning. I mean, it was in an instant. I was shocked at how quickly it happened. And that name escapes me. I don't know that guy's name. But the defensive coordinator they hired the guy from Western Kentucky, Clayton White. And the first thing he says in his opening press conference, he is looking for STI top players. When he's recruiting, he wants speed, toughness, and instinct. It's like, you realize that you coach the Cox and you're looking for STIs. Like, buddy. What a sport.
Marcus Satterfield.
It's a Satterfield. Ooh, can you actually do? I'll take the liberty. Was this from Bruce Feldman? That you sent this? It was
Josh Kendall.
Oh, the athletic. Okay. So
South Carolina beat writer.
Only an athletic writer could write this. This is how he describes Satterfield. Satterfield will blend his own offensive system with things Beamer brings from Lincoln Riley's offensive system and the things he learned from Panthers offensive coordinator Joe Brady. Folks, the Gamecocks are going to be a combination of Oklahoma and Joe Brady. Lincoln Riley, Joe Brady. Right.
To be fair to Kendall, that's what Satterfield said in the press conference. So,
oh God, did he cry about L's down too? There, or is that the other side of the Satterfield family?
That's the other Satterfield. But South Carolina Beamer made some weird hires. I like Clayton White. I think he did a good job at WKU. But they went from potentially Derek Mason. You heard Bud Foster's name because of the Virginia Tech ties with Beamer. And then they landed on Clayton White. And then Marcus Satterfield, he hasn't called plays in a little bit. He was Matt Rule's offensive coordinator at Temple. But then when he joined up with Matt Rule, he was just a tight ends coach there at Baylor. So, he didn't feel the rush to promote him. And then he was just an assistant offensive line coach for 1 year with the Panthers when Rule went to Carolina. Just a weird kind of staff he's putting together.
Not very splashy for a new coach.
Well, with Beamer, the sell was, all right, my dad's a legend. I work with Kirby Smart at Georgia. I worked with Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma. So with my Oklahoma connections, I can get us something, some high-flying offense kind of thing. With Georgia connections, I have defensive, SEC roots kind of thing. He hires no one with any type of Oklahoma Lincoln Riley connections at all.
Zero.
And then it seems like the time at Georgia, he hired no one that any type of relationship that could have been built there. So it's like, well, what are we doing here? And then he's going to be the lowest paid SEC coach. He's going to make $2.5 million. I think it's the number $2.5-3. And so you think, oh, they're going to load up on staff. They're going to pay staff a lot of money. They hire these guys that are probably going to – Satterfield and Clayton White are probably going to make $500K or something around those lines.
Got to pay Muschamp.
So, yeah. So, this is what's turning out to be – this is turning out to be a cheap hire for South Carolina. the thing with Billy Napier back when you go and look deeper into the search was he wanted him to spin like a big time program. Like wherever he goes, he wants to have all the resources. He wants to be able to get anything he wants. He doesn't want money to be an issue. And it's appearing like South Carolina, that's definitely an issue. Like they're worried about paying Muschamp and they're trying to get a dollar out of a quarter. So we'll see if it works, but I would be a little worried that it seems like they're kind of penny pinching over there.
Oh man. Poor Cox just out here looking for STIs without any money. Oh man. Like, do you got anything for our debut of What a Sport?
I mean, Jaron Garantano after dark is just right in my wheelhouse. Absolutely important, in my wheelhouse. Important, all the way in my wheelhouse.
Of all places, too. Like, that is just, God, that's going to be a sight.
Well, it's perfect because he goes to a, like, random Big 12 school or random ACC school. I'm probably not going to see him as much. But I know now I'm going to see him at least probably three times during the year. Mm-hmm. Just late at night when nothing else is on. And everybody's going to be focused. God. It's
perfect. He's going to throw just some wonderful pick sixes. I mean, they're going to be beautiful. Running the little outs. Like, I don't think Rolovich, I mean, I don't think he's exactly Mike Leach, but he's going to throw a lot of passes. They're going to jump some routes and just go to the house. It's going to be, man, can't wait. Can't wait for it. It's going to be great after a 7:30 kickoff at the Krogue to come back home and get to wind second down
half, yeah.
with Garantano throwing pick sixes.
Yeah.
Oh, man. It's going to be great. Speaking of Tennessee, I thought they had a hiring freeze, and then they hired Kevin Steele?
I know.
What?
I know.
So
you know who was runner-up to getting the job when they hired Jeremy Pruitt?
Was it Kevin Steele?
Kevin Steele. Mm-hmm.
And they hired – but he's not even like a defensive coordinator, right? He's not going to take Derek Ainsley's spot?
He's making like 500-something thousand. He's just going to be some type of assistant, they haven't said.
What?
Which that smells like interim head coach in waiting. I mean, it just has that stink all over it.
Interim head coach in waiting. That's great.
And then, like, Tennessee's issues aren't on the – like, think about this, Nick. They have Jeremy Pruitt, defensive coordinator at Alabama, as their head coach. Derek Ainsley was also off that Saban tree. Went and was an assistant for the Raiders, mm-hmm. their defensive coordinator, who they went out and decided Pruitt can't call the defense anymore. We need to pay somebody. So pay this guy $1 million. Okay. So now we want to bring in a third defensive coordinator who's also off that Saban tree and Kevin Steele. That's a lot of damn cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And then they've got all kinds of issues on the other side of the football. That's where their problem is. It's on offense. It's not on defense.
It's firing Derek LeBlanc when your quarterback throws three interceptions.
Jimmy Brumbaugh, yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. Wrong former UK coordinator, defensive line coach. But, like, that's Tennessee. What a bunch of buffoons. That's just what they are, a bunch of buffoons.
I am very – I'm not sure Pruitt makes it to the season. It looks like he is now.
Mm-hmm.
But just watching, they're just going to be fascinating to watch all offseason. Hopefully we get some type of media days.
Mm-hmm.
When Fulmer has to go probably on his little circuit in the summer, talk to boosters, what gets leaked out of those meetings. They're just going to be fascinating to watch all year because we know how it's going to end. It's just – getting there is going to be the fun. Like, how we get there is going to be the enjoyment. We know how it started. We already know how it's going to end. Now it's just getting there. How do we get there?
And then they added Hendon Hooker at quarterback,
which makes no sense. Like, that just makes no sense.
I mean, isn't Harrison Bailey supposed to be their guy? Like, what?
Well, Jim Chaney's strict pro style offense, but they've got a good quarterback out of Texas who's kind of like a dual threat guy, which doesn't make much sense. If they're going to make a change, I don't know if Chaney's the guy you want running that offense, but we'll see.
Yeah, don't make much sense. Don't make much sense at all.
We still don't know this thing with Eric Gray. this investigation, if he's even going to be eligible, because it seems like that centering around him plus the recruitment of that kid, Amarius Mims, just committed to Georgia or signed with Georgia. Mm-hmm. So they're just going to be, Tennessee's just going to be fascinating to watch, especially in this offseason.
Didn't realize they lost Ty Chandler too. And he's
And if you see all these guys, they've got 10 plus guys in the portal.
He's going to North Carolina to play for Mac Brown, the Mac attack. So yeah, I don't.
And then their offensive tackle, Wanya Morris, who was a 5-star, just entered today.
Man. Oh no. Bad things are happening at Tennessee. Shucks.
Like I said, we know how it's going to end. Just getting there.
There's a couple other things. One other thing, I guess this is almost like a what a sport thing, because it was so bizarre and it happened so quickly that I couldn't even really comprehend what was going on. But Josh Edwards from 24/7 reported that Kentucky was moving on from Javon Bonight, the UK wide receivers coach. And so on the one hand, you're like, okay, well, maybe Cohen just wants to get his own guy, get a guy from the NFL. They've made all these offensive NFL hires. They'll just go get that. So, you know, receivers have stunk. Why not? But on the other hand, you were like, well, why wait? Why did it take so long to fire him? Was his contract? Like, are they just going to get him through the spring because he's on a one-year deal or something? Like, I don't know. It didn't make sense for that reason. And also you thought, well, they need some continuity in that room. And I don't know why Mark Stoops and Vince Merrill would go so out of their way to praise him if they were going to just let him go as soon as they got finished with the bowl game. And while the wheels and the hamster head are turning, the boss man, the KSR CEO, Matt Jones, gets a call during his radio show to answer, who I can only imagine who from UK was out there to correct that report and say, no, he's staying here. So like it, I don't, what do you make of all of this? Because it was a bizarre hour and a half, 90 minutes of getting rid of the receivers coach. No way. Actually, we're keeping the receivers coach, but are they really going to keep the receivers coach? It's so weird that would be out there because, you know, Josh is pretty plugged in. And he's not going to put something out there if he doesn't feel like there's something to it.
I think definitely something was there. That maybe it smells like something was possibly there and then it ended up falling through for whatever reason.
You know what? It could have been like the Mike Stoops thing last year where, I mean, how long did we think they were before they were that like it was going to happen? And then maybe Football Scoop put something out there. So we put it on the site and UK was quick to.
Yeah, it was Football Scoop.
Yeah, to shoot that down. So it could be similar in that instance where they had somebody else lined up. It got out, so it fell through. But nevertheless, it was very bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, like, here's the thing. Like, obviously you want continuity in that receivers room. But if you realize Boo Knight's probably not the guy, it's better just to move on, you know, right now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so for that standpoint, I mean, I don't know. It's all, I think a lot of it has to do with Cohen. Has Cohen really gotten a chance to really evaluate him?
No.
Really see who he wants, if he doesn't want him, who he would want.
You know? Yeah, I mean, they're still playing football right now. You know,
That's the one to watch out for. Like when he gets in, say the Rams lose to the Packers this weekend. Which,
pretty good chance that's going to happen.
If he gets to Lexington, you know, let's say Tuesday, Wednesday, starts working full time. You know, that then the next week to 10 days would be the time to watch for that if a change would occur.
And from my understanding, too, like he hasn't been, I think he saved a lot of the from my understanding of folks that have been in contact with him, it's been very just like, hey, this is Coach. We'll talk more later, but just wanted to introduce myself. Like, I think that's been the extent of it so far. Especially with players on the team, because they just want to be left to hell alone for a few weeks. So I don't think he's been that involved, particularly, tricky
word.
You know what? I usually do pretty good with it, and it got me there particularly. It particularly got with me there. But I think Wims, it's one kid he has reached out to.
Yeah, I would.
Which, you know, should have, if you're going to make an exception for them, it's that guy. He didn't. Dante Key called in and said that he hadn't spoke to Cohen yet. I hope that he would have at least reached out to Dane to say something, which he might have. But, you know, Matt just asked if Dante had talked to him or not, and he said no. But, you know, those are that and Bingham. Those are the big guys that he's got to be in the mix with early and often. He's got, you know, a lengthy checklist. But until then, I'm just going to give him all the credit in the world for pulling off that win without a functioning quarterback.
I mean, yeah, much credit goes to the Rams defensive coordinator.
I think it all goes on Cohen.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think so. But
which, by the way, we put off talking for the Rams, about the national championship game. Dude.
It's about what I thought would happen in a certain way. I didn't think it would get that ugly. I thought Ohio State's offense would put up more of a fight.
Justin Fields just sucked so much in that first half, man. He was scared. He was scared.
Ohio State played their national championship in the Sugar Bowl.
Sermon got hurt right away too, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just
– I mean, Devontae Smith got hurt. Mac Jones got hurt, was playing hurt. Jalen Waddle's out there on one leg, and they still
– just crushed him.
Yeah, they still had no chance. Even there was a one possession where he threw that touchdown to that white kid, Slade Bolden.
Yeah.
That possession, that entire possession, that was Mac Jones, Alabama starting on line, and guys that were twos or threes on Alabama when they started fall camp. And they just went down like butter, 7 plays, 75 yards, touchdown.
I mean, Ohio State's defense, I know they were out a couple of defensive linemen, and that's what really gave Clemson fits. But even if they had those guys,
it didn't matter against that Bama O-line.
That's – yeah, you're right. It didn't matter because of that. But the scheme they try, like some of the,
oh yeah.
How are you putting a safety 8 yards down the field, man to man on Devontae Smith? Like what are you doing? Well, some of that stuff made absolutely no sense. I got at the beginning of the game when they were playing the, you know, Kirk Herbstreit kept talking about, we're going to give him a little bit. We just got to take away the deep ball and then lock him up in the red zone. But when they decided to go man, you're going to let Sark get Smith one-on-one with that big-ass middle linebacker? Like, what the hell?
Yeah, I think that was a coverage bust. And then the linebacker realized what was going on, so he just started sprinting after Smith. That's what it looked like to me, but I could be wrong. But what Ohio State did was they wanted to get their best 11 on the field, which happened to be 3 or 4 linebackers at a time. So they didn't feel comfortable going nickel dime.
Oh, man.
And Ohio State's scheme works when you got Chase Young, Nick Bosa, Joey Bosa screaming off the edge. When you can't get consistent pass rush and then you go up against an offensive line that's just a bunch of war daddies up there, you know, you're dropping the cover 3, you're just going to get picked apart against good offenses. And I think that's kind of what happened. Now, Bama's offense is just ridiculous. They're scoring on everybody.
Right. Yeah,
it's not really going to matter what you're going to do.
Well, and that was why you couldn't be too overly critical because, like,
right.
Like they're doing that to everybody.
But there was some schematic things that they were doing. It's like, this ain't going to cut it.
No.
Like,
at least trying to put some pressure on Mac Jones. That was the thing I didn't get. The one time Ohio State did something good defensively, they forced a fumble on Mac Jones because they got pressure on him. Why aren't you just bring the freaking house against Bama? Like, go down swinging at least. My God.
Yeah, I would – I mean, I'm waiting for somebody to try this because it goes against everything. You're built in as a defense. And I think Clemson did some – they tried to do some of this against LSU last year when they just kind of did the 3-1-7 kind of defense.
Mm-hmm.
Just dare them to run the ball. Like, be like, if Najee Harris – if they give him the ball 40 times and he goes for 300 yards, so be it. But don't let, you know, double team Smith and drop in like some 3 deep and flood the routes and try to demand them to run the ball. Like, see if they get greedy. Because I would think an offense would get aggressive and then maybe you could bait them into some turnovers. But these teams come out, they're like, all right, we got to stop the run, got to stop the run, got to stop the run. And then it just, I mean, it opens you up to just get, you know, picked apart by these laser pass games.
We'll say, though, Najee Harris, like, I don't even know how he, where he stacks up along with the rest of the killer running backs they've had.
He's pretty good.
Man, the thing with him is he's the guy that you think you have tackled at 4 or 5, and it's like a win, and then he gets to 9. And that's in receiving, that's in running. His ability to, like, a lot of really talented running backs are like that. But him in particular, just it seemed more impressive because he was doing so much of it in space. And that's what might make him the best pro out of all of them, is because of his ability to catch the pass out.
He runs like a 200-pound guy.
And he's not.
But he weighs 240. Because he's got some lateral quickness and agility where he can make guys miss kind of in space. But then when you hit him, he's falling forward. He's running people over. And he's a guy, I think, in the NFL, he can be – you know, he can really be an effective pass catcher out of the backfield, which is not something you see from these big backs, these 6'2", 240 guys. And so that I'm very interested to see how he's utilized at the next level, because I think he can be a really good pass catcher on top of a good runner inside. Like, he's not the brute force I think you've seen from Derrick Henry and some other guys they've had inside, but I think his pass catching ability, I think is very enticing for him at the next level. And I think ETN was the slam dunk RB1 in this draft. And I think he's gotten surpassed by Najee Harris. Like, I think he could sneak into the end of the first round. He had a great year.
Yeah, no, he certainly did. Man, I bet Mac Jones would fit in well at the Preston Highway Roosters.
Yeah.
I bet you he can slam some.
A lot of Jacksonville and Mac Jones, nuts. Man.
Oh, man, dude. That picture of him with his shirt off.
Yeah.
Man, you know, that's the ideal male body right there. That's peak male body physical conditioning right there. Just, doughboy. And you know what? I always thought
he filled out in college like a lot of guys do. Like, he hit the weight some, but there was some beers.
12-ounce curls there, man. Yeah. Yes. Because he was scrawny as hell as a recruit, but I always thought it was a rib protector he had on. Nope, that's just his gut.
They show that combine picture of Brady all the time.
Yeah.
You don't need it at that position.
No, you don't.
It's all about accuracy.
Yeah, and how well can you sling it? Look, actually, I don't even want to bring it up because I decided to cheer for the Steelers, and then they went and did that. This wild card first playoff game, I'm cheering for them. They just get embarrassed. So that's obviously the biggest surprise from last weekend. But what are we liking this weekend on divisional round weekend? I really did like the double triple header.
Oh, it was beautiful.
It was pretty awesome. Except for, like, I hate it. It's just it's naturally going to happen in every playoff system. There's always one conference that's better than another. So, like the Colts and Dolphins are better teams than the Bears in.
Yeah, AFC's been stacked this year.
Yeah, and like, the NFC.
The Colts as a 7th seed is kind of robbery.
Right. Which is why I think the Bills are battle-tested. And, I mean, Bills-Ravens is game this weekend, right?
Yeah, for sure. And Saturday night, that's the best spot.
I think I saw a 50% chance of snow.
There you go. And Packers Rams are what? That's the Saturday afternoon game.
Saturday games, I guess you've got the Breeze Brady thing, but I don't.
The Rams defense against Packers offense, from like, if you're into like any type of X and O stuff at all, how they're going to match up against each other, that's kind of fascinating, because it's probably the best offense in the NFL versus one of the better defenses we've seen in the NFL in a little bit.
Jalen Ramsey versus Davante Adams.
Right. The Aaron Donald on the line of scrimmage.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fascinating matchup. And Rodgers having one of his better years versus a defense that's just gotten the job done really all season. That's a great matchup. You get the Baker-Mahomes matchup again, this time in the NFL playoffs. Like, that's been played up a bit. That game where they both threw for like 7 or 8 yards.
Yeah, Pro Football Focus, they tweeted out that video within 20 seconds of that matchup being announced.
And then what's the other? Saints-Bucks, I think, is a fun game too.
That'll be fun. I just have this feeling that the Bucks are frauds. It's the opposite of, well, I guess Peyton had 3 years in Denver, right? Is that right? He had 3 years where they lost. They lost the first one, I think they just went to the playoffs, but they weren't that good. The second year was their Super Bowl year, right?
They lost the Super. They won the Super Bowl twice. They won one, lost one.
Do we remember which order it was?
Because first year they lost to the Ravens when the Ravens won the Super Bowl in like double overtime. The Ravens went to Denver and beat them. And then the next year, they went to the Super Bowl, I think, and lost to the Seahawks. And then I think there was a third year in between, and then his fourth year is when they won the Super Bowl.
See, and I have a feeling that Brady – I'm
going to look that up.
Yeah, well, the Ravens beat the 49ers, so I know that part was at least wrong. But they lost to them in the playoffs. I see what you're saying. Okay.
Because they're both AFC.
I have this feeling that the Bucks, as good as their weapons are, that like next year is really when they get it together. And just the same.
I have it here if you're ready for it.
Okay, yeah, hit me.
Okay, his first year there was 2012. They go 13-3, get one seed, lose to the Ravens. His next year there is 2013. They lose to the Seahawks in the Super Bowl. They go 13-3.
Get blown out, and then they beat Cam Newton and Carolina the next year. That's what it is.
In 2014, they go 12-4. They lose to the Colts, but I think Peyton got hurt, so he wasn't the quarterback. I think it was like Osweiler or something. Fire John Fox. And then in 2015, they go 12-4 with Gary Kubiak. Their defense is incredible, and they won the Super Bowl. They beat the Panthers.
And Gary Kubiak is a Super Bowl winning head coach.
Mm-hmm.
God.
Whew. They go 12-4 in the regular season. Trying to scroll down to the playoffs. They beat the Steelers in the divisional round. They were the 3 seed. The Broncos were that year. They go to New England, or they host New England, or no, never mind. They were the one seed, it looks like. 1 or 2 seed. They host New England in the AFC Championship. They beat them 20-18. And then they beat the Panthers in the Super Bowl.
Business decision. But yeah, that was my long way of saying that I think those two have similar career arcs, and I just don't think it's the Bucks' time yet. Saints defense, very good.
Yeah.
I
think low-key Brady like has been awesome for about the last month and a half.
Gets bad teams, though.
Yeah.
They only beat Washington by 8. I mean, that was a push. Good teams win. Great teams cover. Like it, we know this.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm buying some of their stock right now. I think I'm not big on the Saints. I haven't really been big on them all year.
Well,
so we'll see.
You forget that the Saints go marching.
And I would love to see Rodgers versus Brady in Lambeau for the NFC Championship. I think that would be fun.
Yeah, that would be fun. And then the Packers lose. TJ gets all sad.
I mean, that's just to see Brady and Lambeau on for an like NFC Championship game. That's
cold
against Rodgers. Like, I mean, that's
ooh, it could be like a Tuck rule, like 30 years later and all the snow.
That's what I want. I think that'd be pretty cool. And then give me Chiefs versus Ravens be fun, but I really want to see Chiefs versus Bills.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think the Ravens have the ammo to.
No, they don't. Especially a receiver, even though Hollywood Brown's been like he played better, they just
don't. The Ravens defense is good, but
and Josh
I just don't
Allen,
know.
Josh Allen is fun. He does some weird stuff.
He can play make. He can just make plays happen.
And that's what's fun, man. It's like, oh, sports aren't just like mechanical, like that Tom Brady's turned into. You know, he's a sports, he's a quarterback robot. Josh Allen's fun. Him and Mahomes, they're both a lot of fun, and. I think the Bills actually have a shot against them, which that's really what you want. Even though we cheer for greatness, we also cheer against it. And mm-hmm. I want the Bills to have a chance to beat the Chiefs. I want to see that game. So, but we'll find out all this weekend after the division round. It's our last big weekend of football games where you got
right
board time. Thank God.
Get Saturday action still. This is the last Saturday action.
Kentucky's got an early basketball tip, so just enough time to get that game over with. And, whew, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of Saturday beers. Okay.
There we go.
Woo! Looking forward to it. Well, we're also going to be waiting around for Wandale a little bit longer. Hopefully we get some good news. You might have already got some good news by the time you're listening to this. In that case, go Cats, go Kroger.